Welcome to the Homegrown Podcast. This is the podcast that is accompanying our magazine that is launching in April. And we are your hosts. My name is Luke.
I'm Gina.
And I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Maddie.
And a little bit about us. So we're all creative communication students. Personally, I'm thinking of majoring in public relations. It's a two-year program, and we all choose majors in the second year. What are you guys thinking of majoring in?
I'm thinking of going into ad, if I can pull through by the end of the semester.
I'm thinking of going into journalism.
I'm torn between media production and advertising, so.
Maddie, you have to do media pro, and then we have, like, one of each of us.
I know.
We're complete.
Yes. We'd be a complete group.
We're a clean, complete group.
I might, you know what, just for that alone, I'll probably
just
go
for us.
So we're beginners in both podcasting and our topic for today, which is local food, which is what our magazine will be about. And but yes, we have learned a lot in our time in creative communication so far, and we're going to launch a great magazine. Mm-hmm. And
it'll be informative. Everything you need to know about farm to table and supporting local.
Mm-hmm. A little
in
trendy.
Manitoba. Yeah. So what did you guys do this weekend?
I worked all weekend, and I tried to do homework. Keyword tried. Whether it was successful or not is a different question. But yeah, work when I'm not in school.
Where do you work?
I worked my photography job at Career Trek. So I was basically documenting programming for a full day of different programs for Career Trek.
Nice.
Yeah. What did you do, Caitlin?
I also tried to do homework. Did not do quite that much. I did an escape room on Saturday.
Cool. Which one?
No way.
Which one?
I did the castle one.
Ooh, did you get out?
Yeah, I escaped.
just you by yourself.
Just me. No, there was like 12 of us, so nice. I feel like that was why, because that was the maximum amount you were allowed. Yeah.
I also did an escape room with this you guys weekend? Just today, just to get into this radio studio.
Trying to set up. I was like, what are you talking mic? About? No, we did it.
What'd you do, Maddie?
Nothing crazy. Spent a lot of time with family. I actually went out to the lake, and so it was like a nice little getaway for the weekend.
Ooh, was it cold?
It was like crisp, but you know, like everything is like snowy, so it looks really good, and all the trees look pretty, so it's like you sacrifice the weather for the scenery.
That's true, I guess.
That's what I did.
Nice. That sounds like a bit of a PR spin. It was crisp.
Yeah.
It was a nice fresh day.
That's true.
Despite the weather.
Yeah.
What about you, Luke?
I actually went to St. Norbert Farmers Market. Yeah, like it was my first time at a farmers market. It was an interesting experience. I actually, that'll be coming up on our segment today. Manitoba on the menu. The other day, I heard that farmers markets are still happening throughout the Manitoba winter. I immediately thought, how? What are the farmers selling? Are they growing in winter somehow? So I went straight to the source to find out. St. Norbert Farmers Market. It was my first time at a farmer's market, and it was bustling. Dozens of vendors crammed into a community hall, and customers filled the space in between vendors. Fortunately, I quickly bumped into the right people to answer my questions.
I'm Marilyn Firth, and I'm the executive director of the St. Norbert Farmers Market. Our market is 100% local, so that means that when you come here and you purchase something, the person who's selling it to you made it, baked it, or grew it.
And how long has there been a winter market for?
This is our fourth year having a winter market, but it's also our 30th anniversary as a farmer's market in Manitoba, so this is a really big year for us.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Really excited to have that 30 year mark come along. Yeah.
How do people produce in winter? Like, I'm sure it's different for
everyone.
That's
a great question.
Like, for vegetables and, like...
Yeah, so obviously for the meat producers, you know, they have freezers, right? So they can produce a lot of the specialty.
Obviously.
So that's no problem for them. For the vegetable vendors, it's a little harder. And so a number of them now, they have greenhouses and storage. So
Stefan from Blue Lagoon Organics had a busy table selling vegetables.
Well, most of these are all storage items. Okay. So the fact that I sell the fresh herbs, yeah. Sage and winter savory just tends to have less water content in it.
Yeah.
So things like parsley will keep for a good 6 weeks in the fridge after you harvest it. But things like dill or basil, they're only going to last about a week. They're really, really nice.
Besides storage, Marilyn explained that indoor growing facilities are becoming more common as St. Norbert's winter market grows.
We have a guy that does microgreens, and his production facility is completely inside, and he's doing microgreens, and I think he's doing edible flowers, and he's getting into some other products as well.
Yeah.
And his whole production facility is not even a greenhouse; it's an inside with lights, like it's.
Yeah.
So they're, we're seeing more of that kind of production happening as time goes on.
Yeah, what an experience that was. I really, like I said, I'd never been to a farmer's market before. Going inside, just like had to pause and look around because so much is going on. Just like that place is crammed into Eagles Club, community hall, and just like there is a lot going on. So I literally had to just take a sec to look around. Have you guys been to farmer's markets before?
I don't think I have, actually.
Me too.
I go to farmers markets every summer. Like, you can go, there's 2 days to go. You can go, like, I think, it's Saturdays or Sundays, and there's always, like, Thursday, I think. And I usually do the weekend, and the weekend's, like, the packed one. But, yeah, it's definitely something that's, like, part of my summer ritual.
Really? Like, is it always St. Norbert Farmers Market, or is
That's always the one I've gone to. I know there's, like, a couple others, but, like, depending on if it's a weekend or a daytime one, and like sometimes even like depending on the time of the year, the like the vendors always are kind of different. There's always like the same ones, but there's lots of new ones, and so that's kind of why I like to go all the time, because there's different stuff each time. And like as seasons change, so do the things, like pumpkins become more prominent in autumn, and spring has different other things too.
Right.
That's cool.
Gina, did you say you had been to, or?
I have never gone, actually.
Okay.
You guys should check it out. I do like them. They're lots of fun.
Yeah.
Maddie, do you have like some favorite vendors that are there every year?
Okay, like there's some really good, like there's like a coffee one, so they like make the coffee in their like truck there, and or like it's like a van, which is like it's good coffee. And there's also some, there's this guy, he does these wood carvings, and he's there like every time, and like you can kind of see his like how it gets made, because each time he goes there, he's either like more developed the sculpture, or he's like finished, which is really cool to see. And then like other than that, I love getting like the homemade like empanadas and stuff. So there's a bunch. I go for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, I was surprised to see, like, just thinking like a farmer's market, I didn't expect to see like there's like jewelry there and like other handcrafted things.
So it's not just like food and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. But it is supposed to be 100% local, especially at St. Norbert, because they have people that inspect. They actually go to the farms and like see if it's everything is actually local.
So did you find that everything was local?
I did talk to somebody I was kind of confused about. I asked this guy about his his vinegar, and I asked about the peppers, and he said they weren't local because he used local peppers and he found worms in them.
Nope.
So I don't know. There must be some sort of definition of local. I don't know if you guys know about.
Maybe you will find out.
What does it mean to be local? Does a certain amount have to be local of it?
From what I've found during my research, back to your point of like whether or not, what is the actual definition of it being local? So according to the Manitoba Food Processors Association, from what I found online, for it to be considered like Manitoba food, they say any food or beverage made entirely from ingredients sourced in Manitoba or composed of more than 85% of main ingredients from Manitoba. So all of the processing and packaging activities must be done in Manitoba itself to be considered Manitoba food.
Hmm.
And then if it's considered Manitoba-made food, any food product or beverage processed and packaged entirely in Manitoba. So when the main ingredients are available in Manitoba in sufficient quantities, they must be used. So I guess, what did he not use? The peppers?
The peppers. So, yeah, like, I don't know what I guess that's giving the special taste of each different kind of vinegar he had.
Oh, okay,
so maybe
yeah.
That's the rest of the ingredients of vinegar, which I have no idea what they are, but and maybe that was all local. Or maybe he just packaged it together and that's Manitoba made then?
Mm-hmm.
Or
I guess since considering the peppers or whatever were not sufficient enough for him to use, I guess it's not safe to use it if they were not.
If they had worms in them.
Yeah, yes. I'd hope not. But yeah, I guess it would be considered Manitoba-made food, I'm assuming.
So did he just find worms in it, like, once and was like, no, I'm out of here? Or was it more than once?
He said on multiple occasions.
Multiple
yeah.
occasions. Yeah, that sounds like not a great. not a
no
great.
Offense,
that
sorry.
Could be anywhere from two to infinity.
Yeah, that's what multiple means.
But it should not stop you from trying to support local, though.
Worms shouldn't stop you?
No, but like stopping like growing. You just got to keep trying, you know?
Yeah, it's
but
true.
I guess I don't really know much about gardening. I've mm-hmm. never really tried.
Yeah, I suggest I'm on board with Maddie, though, like that it even if you're not getting anything at the farmer's market, it's worth going just for the experience of like, oh, so this is what goes down here, like seeing everyone.
Well, it sounded like there was a lot of people.
Yeah, mm-hmm. obviously
like
very
considering
popular.
It to be
yeah.
January. I wouldn't assume.
Yeah.
I would assume.
Well, Maddie said that the ones she goes to, it's usually busier on the weekends, right?
Yeah, like, it's busy on the weekends, but, like, also people, this is, like, I think one of the first years where they're doing that farmer's market specifically so early in the year because they've just recently renovated the area, like, where they do have that farmer's market, I'm pretty sure, and, like, now it's, like, called the half, like, it's a winter market,
mm-hmm.
and I think that was, like you said, I don't know if you said it, but this was the first week, right?
So no, this wasn't their first week. I don't think they had one earlier in the year as well. This is their fourth year doing the winter market,
okay.
and they've been around for
fourth year.
Yeah, so it's relatively recent.
But
actually,
they did also recently renovate the space where they do the winter's market. Like it becomes more like it's more of a shelter.
Yes.
Now more
they're actually in the process of building. A new canopy type thing.
Okay. Yeah.
So the place where they do the summer market and winter market can be the same because right now they're renting out like the Eagles Club,
mm-hmm.
But in this future they'll be able to just
stay to one venue
and it won't be as warm as it is inside the community hall, but people will still be able to walk in with their jackets and it'll be semi-warm.
Okay. I didn't
so.
Know that. I thought it was just in the same place, and I was like, that's going to be pretty cold.
Yeah.
I haven't gone in the winter. I go in the summer, but...
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that makes more sense. I think it would be so cool, because just the way they lay it out, too, in the summer, it's really nice to just, like, especially if it's, like, good weather, to go, like, walk around, and there's always, like, a couple food trucks that pull up, and, like, the fresh lemonade stands. It has that, like, summer kind of boardwalk almost kind of feel. It's really nice.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Maddie, do you know if, like, St. Norbert, like, their farmer's market is known for, like, their popcorn or something?
I don't know if there's anything specific like that. I think there's some venues that are, like, always there, so they must make it.
Because I've tried to go, like, years before because my friend's like, we need to get, like, this specific popcorn, but it never just falls through.
Not
so
that
now I'm,
I
like,
know
intrigued.
But there definitely is, like, there's popcorn there, so that's probably the popcorn. So
if you're gonna go to the farmer's market, find the popcorn.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Would you go back?
Yeah, I will go back actually. Yeah, definitely, because everything looks so tasty, and there's all sorts of like, kind of like weird foods that like I'd be interested to try. I got some jam there, and I got some eggs.
Nice.
I think it's called like. I don't want to botch the name. I think it was called Grammy's Jam or something. And I had it in my PB&J today, and it was great. So,
ooh.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
I even went there before Thanksgiving. And so what I normally do is I get, like, the fresh bread and the fresh buns there. And then I also, there's, like, really weird gourds. So I always pick, like, a weird gourd for, like, the table piece. That's my go-to for Thanksgiving.
What's, like, the weirdest gourd you've ever gotten?
Okay, there's these ones, I don't know what they're called, that they grow on, like, a long stick, and there's a bunch of them on a stick. They're, like, really small. They almost look like cherry tomatoes, but they're, like, tiny pumpkins. And they grow on a stick, and you, like, stick them in a vase. So basically you have, like, a little pumpkin stick that looks like cherry tomatoes.
Do they grow like that, or are they like just tiny pumpkins that someone has like arranged? No, they grow like that.
They're like a really weird plant, and last year was the first year that I ever saw them, and I was like, what are these? And so I kept them, or I got them, and I also kept them until they like shriveled up, and then they looked really cool too, so they're a year-round wonder.
While we're on the topic of unusual foods, I learned a lot. This is a very educational experience of me going to St. Norbert Farmers Market. And I learned about some weird hybrids. And I actually have a question for you guys. I'm going to give you four foods. Uh-huh. And you're going to tell me which one is a GMO out of those and which ones are just hybrids.
Okay.
Oh, gosh.
So here we go. We have kalettes, which is a mashup of broccoli and Brussels sprouts. We have the broccoflower.
I'm assuming that's cauliflower.
Cauliflower, broccoli.
Yeah, that seems like a safe guess. Yeah.
We have the apples that do not brown. They're Arctic apples. And a vibrant yellow pumpkin called organic owl's eye. I feel like this is which a of the question. Four is a GMO? And which of the other three are just hybrids?
I say broccoflower. Is that how you say it?
Gina says broccoflower.
Is a GMO.
I was thinking maybe the apple.
I was also thinking the apple.
Oh, no.
So we got two for the apple.
Like unnatural that an apple
and one for the broccoflower.
That's what I thought.
Oh, no.
The answer is the apples.
Yes. I thought it was a trick question.
It's yeah, interestingly enough, the broccoflower isn't actually... it's not actually like doesn't look like broccoli or anything. It's just cauliflower that happens to be green.
Oh, what?
And these hybrids are food that has been cross pollinated, I guess, over time. Mm-hmm. It's not actually like they haven't been genetically modified together. So like kalettes, which is apparently gaining in popularity. Mm-hmm. A lot of farmers are trying this in Manitoba. So yeah, it's a mashup of broccoli and Brussels sprouts. So it apparently still has like the sweet taste of broccoli, but like the sproutiness of Brussels sprouts.
Sproutiness.
whatever that is. Yeah. Yeah. These kind of hybrids are becoming more popular. But the interesting thing is, all the foods we eat are actually hybrids. Like the things that we've come to eat and like get from grocery stores, the produce mm-hmm. has been changed since years ago. The things our ancestors ate were not the same foods as we have eaten. Like the bananas have gotten bigger.
Like a healthy shift, or I'm assuming.
Pardon me?
It's like health-wise. Is it safer?
Yeah, probably. And just things have been selected. And then, of course, there's things like corn, which is just...
corn.
That's just... Most of them are GMOs, like, yeah. I think... 90% of corn is actually just genetically modified. Hmm. But yeah, the apples that do not brown, that is completely GMO. It's just...
Yeah, I agree with Maddie on that one. It sounded weird.
It doesn't seem right.
It does sound weird.
Yeah.
I thought it was too good to be true.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
That's like... How did I second guess?
Have you heard of those... they're called like grapples or like grapple?
Yes.
No.
They're in the grocery store usually. They sell them in a pack of four in like pre-plastic. Like they're in a plastic package. And I was like talking to someone being like, do they really like infuse like, or do they really combine like the grape and the apple? Like what is this magic? And my friend was like, no, they just kind of like soak the apple in some grape juice.
Oh.
And they like inject it and then that's it. And now they call it a grapple or grapple.
Oh, I just searched it up. It says crunch is like an apple. Tastes like a grape.
It's true, wow. But like it's kind of a sham. But that's what made me think of it, the apples that don't bruise.
Wait, why is it a sham?
Because it's like it's not a real they didn't do it naturally.
It sounds like it's a hybrid, but it isn't.
It's not really a real hybrid. They just kind of soaked it.
It's not very special anymore.
Huh. But do try it if you get the chance.
Maddie, I actually have some exciting news for you.
Oh, okay.
I looked up the pumpkin on a stick that you were talking about.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And it's real.
Yeah.
And yeah, they're known as the pumpkin pepper.
Hmm.
And they're actually
lying.
Really cute. Yeah,
you actually wasn't lying.
Well, no, I just thought maybe you were wrong, but no.
It was actually some crafted.
Yeah, no, I thought they were made, but yeah. Their scientific name is Solanum ethiopicum, and they're a close relative of grocery store eggplants.
They're really
eggplants.
Cute.
Eggplants.
Huh.
Yeah.
They make great decorations for Thanksgiving and Halloween.
Yeah. They're really cool. I've never seen them before.
Me too.
Well, they're at the St. Norbert's Farmers Market.
Wow.
What other unusual fruits or foods do you know about?
Well, I've heard about, speaking of eggplants, actually, just eggplants have become a lot more popular. This is just, I'm a newcomer to local food knowledge, and I've just learned all this recently, but I heard that with a lot of people from Asian countries coming to Canada, they... things like eggplant and some other kinds of produce that I can't pronounce have become very popular. Like, people are actually, instead of importing them, like, eggplant imports have gone down a ton. And now, like, there's actually, like, a number of farmers who are just, who are growing eggplant in Manitoba.
I guess that's good.
Yeah.
I guess. I mean, it is good.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about eggplants. Like, are they hard to grow? In, like, a prairie climate?
I'm not completely sure about that. Well, like, knowing from when I went to St. Norbert Farmers Market, they were saying about how the greenhouses are becoming more popular and indoor growing is becoming a bigger thing. So I'd assume it has to be indoors, although... I'm definitely not knowledgeable on the topic.
What do you even do with eggplants? Like, what do you cook with them?
I don't know. I don't think I've ever eaten eggplant.
I don't think so either.
Yeah, I don't know.
Eggplants. Sorry. I don't know either.
No, I can't believe eggplants are the topic that stumped us.
Yeah, wow.
Disappointing.
I've... seen that emoji, but I've never
actually. I searched up eggplants, and the first thing that popped up is, what is the meaning of the eggplant emoji?
And what does it say, Gina?
I didn't click on it because I didn't want to.
It's pretty clean. I did
nope,
it already.
So far it's just eggplants.
Way to go.
No, yes. Some of them have some googly eyes.
Yeah,
oh, nice. I think we
just some wholesome arts
eyes.
And crafts.
Ew.
There's a type of white eggplant, and it grows, and it literally looks like there's an egg that is growing from a plant, and it's just, like, really weird looking. It's called the white eggplant.
Wow, that's, like, a real eggplant.
Is that real?
I think so. I also saw it in the Farmer's Almanac. So if it's in there, it must be true.
Wow.
Yeah, it looks real.
Pretty weird.
Yeah, they do. They look like these weird, like, mushy eggs.
Yeah. Like hard-boiled eggs.
Like a reptile egg or something?
Dinosaur
yeah,
eggs.
No, it looks like an egg that's, like, melting.
Have you guys heard of, like, white strawberries?
No.
I think that's a thing.
I know white raspberries is a thing. There's, like, three different kinds of raspberries, and I have a raspberry bush in my yard, and for the first time ever this year, it's the raspberries were not all just, like, the normal red raspberries. They were also, I got, like, these, like, peach-colored ones and these, like, white ones, and they taste, like, really sweet. They're really good, but they don't grow as often or as much as, like, the red ones.
So that was just by chance.
It was just by chance, yeah. And then they were, like, they taste amazing, so they're, like, the prize raspberries.
This was in the summertime?
Yeah.
That's super interesting. I didn't know that, actually. I thought it was just red.
I didn't either. Yeah, until they grew, and I was, like, what are these white raspberries?
Were you
I thought
scared
I had,
to try
like,
them?
No, I just was like, what is this albino raspberry? And it turned out well so far.
Gina, I think that the white strawberry you're talking about is also a hybrid. I mean, like, all the fruits are hybrids, but the like, it's the common strawberry that we have was combined with some other strawberry that, and they made these white strawberries.
That's a lot of strawberry.
Yeah.
Apparently they're called pine berries.
That's what I
Oh, it says found that a unique pineapple strawberry flavor.
Oh, oh wow.
Yeah, it says the berry was dubbed pine berry for the UK market where it became available in 2010.
Would you guys ever try it?
I mean, yeah.
Absolutely.
They look good.
They look kind of creepy, but
they
I
do.
Would still try it.
I mean, you tried white raspberries without knowing
yeah,
what happened to
who
them.
Who am I to talk?
I think we'll have to get to bring some of these foods into the studio in a future episode.
Yeah,
maybe. These are like these don't even look real.
The white
the pine berries, yeah.
Yeah.
Like the seeds are bright red.
They look like they'd be in like a fairy tale, and then like when you're walking through the enchanted forest or something.
Luke, you were talking earlier about microgreens.
Yeah, I also don't know too much about microgreens, but
that's okay. It's a learning
don't
process.
Don't let that stop you.
The only thing I know is that I think it's microgreens are used for they use them in like salads and soup, like as garnish on sandwiches sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
This one guy that the Maryland from St. Norbert was talking about was he actually has his like a full microgreen facility. Like that's he has does all microgreens indoors all through the winter, and then I'd imagine the market would be for like fancy restaurants that are using like these like I think like baby spinach is that a microgreen? Because like my mom grew microgreens in our backyard this summer. I know, and I remember going out and just she said, "Oh yeah, you want some spinach?" And I just go outside and clip it from this plant.
I know there. I think there's baby arugula. That sounds like something I've heard before.
That does sound like something I've heard before too.
I don't know if that's a microgreen though.
Okay.
Did you say arugula? Or
yeah, arugula or arugula. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's considered a microgreen.
I know that's often used. Like that, I've seen that even used on like pizzas and stuff, like gourmet ones.
Huh? They're everywhere.
They kind of remind me too of the plant that like when you grow them, they literally grow everywhere. I don't know if this is true, but I just imagine like a takeover just by the pictures.
So I'm reading about microgreens and it says that they're basically like the seedlings of the vegetables. Like it's a certain part of it clipped off. That's the microgreens.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah. And they, they're really high in nutritional value. They have a lot of vitamin C and vitamin E and vitamin K, and then like a bunch of other things that I don't know what they are, but it sounds like they're pretty good for you.
Wait, so this guy strictly just grows microgreens?
I think so.
That sounds really tedious if they're like the sprout or whatever.
Yeah.
Of other vegetables then. Unless there's a different method in how you grow them.
Yeah,
that I
wonder
don't know
how that
about.
Works. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think you grow them in a tray.
Like those little boxes that you can get. Like
yeah, like I don't think you let them get very big. So
you just stop their growth.
Yeah.
And cut them off.
Because then it wouldn't be micro if you got them big. It would be macro greens.
Oh, and it says they only take about a week or two to grow.
Oh.
So they do just grow like crazy.
Yeah, so if you're just always growing them, you always have microgreens.
And I know a huge perk of them is that they grow with no added chemicals. So like you don't really need any like fertilizers or anything. Like they're pretty easy to grow.
Mm.
Awesome.
No, maybe we can start our own microgreen.
Yeah.
Apparently cilantro is a microgreen.
Not a fan of cilantro.
What? Okay, cilantro, you either love it or you hate it. And I personally cannot get enough.
I've heard that, like that it's one of those things that people have really strong opinions about, but like I don't. Like I've had it and it's fine. I don't.
I think it's because like I've had people that are like, oh, I hate cilantro. Blah,
yeah.
Blah. So now it's like one of those things I just notice. I'm just like, nope.
Yeah.
Not a fan. But I think if I get that out of my head, it'll be a different story. Because I've heard that too.
Yeah.
Just really passionate about cilantro.
I'm so passionate.
These, like, I feel like the only time I really eat cilantro is like on tacos.
Ooh, yeah, me too.
Yeah. Like there are these really good chicken tacos at BMC Market, like the taco place in South Osborne.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I feel like that's the only time I ever have cilantro. And those tacos are good, so I just, like, associate that with cilantro being good.
And that place is, like, really authentic tacos, too, right?
Yeah, they're so good.
Okay, yeah. So must be cilantro's legit, then.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
So we are all fairly new to this.
Yeah, we definitely are. I feel like I've learned so much just like
lens.
Looking things up during this podcast recording.
Yeah.
Caitlin, what kind of things have you been learning in the last week or so?
Oh my God. Okay. I have not been learning about like
cilantro.
Weird vegetables. Cilantro. Yeah. So this is all new to me. But I have been looking into like there's different programming in Manitoba and in Winnipeg specifically that sort of like brings people together through food and through local food, especially locally grown produce in Manitoba.
Oh, yeah.
And there's this organization called Food Matters Manitoba. that I've been like kind of like perusing their website.
Yeah, I've heard of
reading
them.
About a bit. Yeah. And so they run a lot of these programs, and there's one that they do that it's for newcomers to Canada. I'm just trying to remember what the name exactly was. I think it was the Newcomer Nutrition Network, and it basically like connects newcomers to Canada, so immigrants or refugees, with like the tools they need to like grow their own food and to learn about agriculture and sustainability in a prairie climate where like a lot of these people are from hugely different climates than the really cold one that we have in Manitoba. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was really interesting. I think that might be something that we look more into as we move along with our magazine.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff going on over there.
Huh. And where is that mostly taking place?
They kind of do it through, it's not like a centralized thing. They put they either hold workshops or they like have groups at different like community organizations around Winnipeg.
Okay.
So it sort of is dispersed throughout the city, it seems.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, that's a nice way to meet people and find a way to like bring your home country back.
Yeah.
To where you are now.
I think food is such a great way to bring people together.
Oh, yeah. Brought us together.
Yeah. What have you guys been up to?
Well, so I guess part of my research for this magazine was finding different organizations or corporations that do food to farm to table, like within their cafeteria or whatever program.
What is farm to table?
Food. So it's basically just using local foods and agriculture and supporting these local companies or farmers and bringing them to, I guess, your organization and using that as an option to like sell food in through your restaurants or through your cafeterias or through whatever food industry you're in. So Manitoba is really pushing for this farm to table or supporting local idea. So then there's this new joint, I don't know if it's new, I can't remember how long ago they set this out, but there's this thing called Buy Manitoba, which is a joint public awareness campaign with the province of Manitoba and the Manitoba Food Processors Association. So basically, it's like encouraging everyone to buy local food, and they did a pilot project where they asked different organizations or different communities to just budget out their food intake or whatever. Not intake, but their supplies to make sure it's strictly from Manitoba or strictly from Winnipeg or whatnot. So there's like quite a few that it was actually fairly surprised to know that they were a part of this Buy Manitoba pilot project. So there was like things like, well, I know University of Winnipeg was all about supporting local. Like, you guys have gone there. Mm-hmm. Have you ever like eaten at the restaurants or like the cafeterias at UW?
I did a few times.
Yeah.
I usually don't buy food at school.
Is it called Pangea's?
Yeah, they
have Pangea's Kitchen. Yeah.
Well, there's a couple different cafeterias. I think that's just one of them, but they're all run by Diversity Foods.
Oh, yes.
Which is, sources the food locally.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
I just went across the street and got some 99 cent pizza. But
yeah, see, that's the thing. They're trying to encourage people to just support local.
If I had known.
And eat healthier.
Yeah.
Oh. I think I read about that too. I think I read that part of their strategy was like reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and they've like committed to now, Manitoba has now committed to purchasing 20% local food. So whether that be
that's for a good push.
Their institutions or whatnot.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, so like to go off of what you were saying, how like you just went across the street to eat somewhere else. Another place I know that does that a lot is like, well, like the students that do that a lot is like at Sisler High School. So I have a lot of friends that go there, and I was like asking them, I was like, oh, do you eat at your school cafeteria? They're like, no, I just go to McDonald's. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you can get such good local food as opposed to like McDonald's, which is just super unhealthy and bad for you.
It's really true, because like now eating locally is in the restaurant industry has become something that's definitely like a hot trend.
Yeah.
And in 2014, Restaurants Canada like did a big survey, and they said like that was one of the like leading, one of the leading reasons for like them to rank a restaurant. So it's definitely becoming.
Oh, so it's like the criteria of how local their food
is.
Yeah,
it's definitely on the radar for when they choose the best.
So do you guys think in like 10 years down the road, will we have even more restaurants following this local farm-to-table movement?
I would hope so.
I think so. And I think it's already happening. It seems like there's a lot more restaurants that are either opening or that are already open and that are like implementing those practices.
Yeah. And I think it's becoming this new trend. Well, sorry, not to use the word trend, but like this whole idea to eat, to be health conscious and to be environmentally conscious of what, like what you consume and what you like use your money towards.
Yeah. Stuff. Like, that's, I guess like, 10 years ago they had the 100-mile diet, which like really like I think started that movement in some ways, where people just have to eat within their food within 100 miles. And then like even recently it's shown, like I keep coming back to St. Norbert, but they like with their new developments, they like they're doing this partly because more farmers are like producing or like more people are wanting to or able to sell local. And then it's also a cycle, because as St. Norbert farmers market grows, then like people realize they have more of an avenue to sell it actually. So it does seem like it's growing from my perspective.
I definitely see there being like a big kind of trend in definitely local food, and then also like restaurants who are being more eco-friendly as well. So I know like not only like is I think the ones at the University of Manitoba, I think Degrees uses a lot of local food.
Yeah, they were part of that list from By Manitoba.
Yeah, and then I also think there's one on, I think there's one called The Daily Bread, and I know that their containers that they use for takeout are like refillable, reusable, like steel, so like they ask the people to bring them back, and then so next time they do takeout, they like reuse the containers.
So small steps.
Yeah, so I think definitely like that's what's leaning. It's making a difference.
Hmm.
Or hoping to.
I just read like someone's Facebook status that they were talking to someone when they were at Miss Brown's last week, and they said that like people do that. They'll bring in their own takeout containers when they order food from there, like their own just like Tupperware or whatever from home, just to not have to waste that.
I think that's such a those great containers. Idea.
Yeah. Can you do that at Starbucks too? Like bring your own what are they called?
Thermos.
Not thermos.
Like you can do
travel
that.
Mug?
Yeah.
You can do that like a lot of coffee, but like Tim Hortons takes that too. Sometimes a lot of places will even give you like a discount.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I think so.
And I think even like sometimes when you do takeout, like not even like taking the cutlery, using your own.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Little things.
Hmm.
The little things add up.
Yeah. Well, and I think sort of like to go back to what Gina was saying, that like people are more interested in like thinking about and being aware of what they're putting their money into and like where their food is coming from and things like that.
Yeah.
And I think also, like, it depends on how, like, how you said that your friends always just go to McDonald's because, mm-hmm. like, that's easy.
Yeah.
So I think it depends on, like, how accessible and how easy it is to get local food and to get healthy food in comparison to, like, somewhere like McDonald's.
I think it's also, like, they're just not aware of, like, the quality. Because, like, when you think of, like, school cafeteria food, like, the stereotype of, like, oh, it's not good, blah, blah, blah. It's kind of lame to eat in your school cafeteria. But when you think about it, or like when you understand the value of the farmers or whoever supplies your food and like the work they put into, why not support it, right? Like, why would you not want to help a fellow in need or help just like support Winnipeg in general? Like, especially if it's good food, which often it really is.
Yeah. And I think that sort of is growing in Winnipeg, like an interest in supporting locally grown food. Yeah. Like, I was looking at the Winnipeg Foundation's released that, like, they do the Vital Signs Report, where it's just, like, a community survey of a bunch of people across the city to sort of see where we are in different social issues. And I was looking in the food-related and, like, the agriculture-related ones, and a lot of the priorities that people identified in the survey as, like, being really important to them right now were sort of having to do with local food, like, increasing access to and consumption of nutritious, locally grown food came up a lot, like all those different points of like not even people being interested in it, but also like making it really easy for people to get, like making that just as much of an option for people as like going to the grocery store or like going to McDonald's or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's actually pretty hard for like a lot of people, like Winnipeg, like CBC did an article a couple years ago about this, like the food deserts in Winnipeg, and there's like certain areas that are very far away from any grocery stores or like grocery stores that actually have like a wide selection or like even just nutritious food or local food. So there's like the accessibility definitely can be improved on, and there's like a lot of areas where people wouldn't, they would have to like taxi if they want to go to a place that actually sells organic or local food. But, I mean, compared to, like, 10 years ago, like, Safeway, and they didn't even have an organic section, so we've come a long way.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's, like, when Nietzsche Commons on Main Street opened, that was, like, to address that that area was such a huge food desert.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it seems like there are more and more places, like, working and people working to address those issues in Winnipeg.
I think one thing to address those issues are CSA boxes. I only found out about those recently. So whether they are community-supported agriculture boxes, it's a way for consumers to buy local seasonal produce from farmers in their community. So kind of you basically register to be part of that CSA and the farmers well in advance. Like you pay them in advance and they basically produce all these fruits and vegetables and agriculture and dairy for you to like have as groceries. And then you just come and pick them up at a specific time every month or something.
Yeah.
And then it's set for you to go. So the accessibility of not having to search everywhere high and mighty or high and low for such ingredients.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's
convenient.
I actually house sat at a house that got one of those subscription boxes, and that was like my first eye opening to that and what it can offer you. And it was just such a cool experience to like every 2 weeks we would go to this. It happened to be a house where you picked it up and you just like it was almost like the like trusting program. Like you just checked your name off and you took one box and everything in it was like so fresh, and it came with like this note from the farmers who grew it, and it was like so personal, and she like talked about how she grew each different vegetable and how like the process that she would do it and how personal it was. I think that was like such a huge it's just kind of like gives you your history, not even history, but it gives you like information like how fresh you know the food you're getting is and where it's coming from. And like for like cooking, like she even included recipes, and like I tried one of them and it was so good with that like fresh vegetables.
Yeah,
it's a really cool idea.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like it would benefit the farmers as well if they know that like they are already paid before.
It's like a loyalty
they produce
program.
That. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There are 22 CSA producers in Manitoba, so farms that are dedicated to the CSA program, which is interesting because mm-hmm. I didn't. This may be a little ignorant, but I didn't realize how many farms there can actually be
in Manitoba.
Yeah,
but it's just the prairies.
Yeah.
A lot of land.
Yeah,
kind of got a little case of perimeteritis.
Yeah. Well, that goes to show, like support local. It really opens your horizons there.
Yeah.
You get introduced to different things you didn't think would actually exist.
Maddie, what was the recipe that you made with the CSA box?
It was like actually a stir fry. So it was basically like every vegetable they gave you to put in the stir fry. And like they had these sweet onions, and they were the biggest sweet onions I have ever seen. They were like massive.
Like
and
how
like,
big are we talking?
Well, like.
Like the size of like my fist?
Like a softball?
Like, yeah, like a little bigger than a softball.
Oh.
Just, like, really big. And they were like, yeah, you can put a whole one in the stir fry. And it was like, good. It was, like, really oniony. But it was, like...
like a sweet oniony.
Yeah, it was, like, a sweet onion, but like, still a lot of onion.
Now I like onions,
too. But, and, like, yeah, it came with everything. They, like, even grew, like, kale and stuff. Like, just things that you wouldn't necessarily expect or know that would be on a farm in Manitoba. And they would be in the box, and you wouldn't know what you were going to get until you got it. And I don't know. Honestly, it's something I like definitely would look into subscribing to. Mm-hmm. And it saves you a trip to the grocery store, and you know.
I feel like you budget well at the same time because you give your money prior to. So
yeah, exactly.
Know right off the bat how much it's going to cost you.
And like she'll give you a little like sneak peek. So like in her letter, she'll be like, "And this is what's coming up next time, and one of my personal favorite root plants." And you're like, "What is the root plant?"
That's so funny.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's just this whole community vibe that food just does to people.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. So there's this guy at St. Norbert Farmers Market. Sorry, just keep going back to that place. It's great.
It's okay. It's a great place.
Oh, he just talked about. He was telling me about how like that farmers market has just become like such a community between the vendors and as well as the people who go there every week to pick up their vegetables.
Oh, so like the visitors and
yeah, like some lady will be like, "I need my, I only get my radishes from St. Norbert Farmers Market and only from like Blue Lagoon Organics or something." She'll go to the same place.
One of the CSA people.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fresh. So then like it really creates this community. Like And it makes sense because everyone's all smiles, just chatting it up there.
It kind of reminds me, well, yeah, it kind of reminds me of like whenever like a new immigrant family or a refugee family like opens up their own restaurant and like how much support they get.
Right.
And just like a feel-good thing. Usually like, I want to go there.
I know some of them, there's, I think it's called Nature's Farm. I think they're at the...
I talked to them.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Herman, I think, is the guy with the glasses.
Yeah, Herman and Cheryl.
Local.
Yeah. When I used to work at a grocery store, he would come in and he would always talk about they do the pasta and they do eggs, those are like their two main selling points.
I got their eggs.
Right on. Yeah, they come in like the really big packs. And when I was working at a grocery store at the time, I ended up like convincing them to bring in the big 24 of eggs.
No way.
Yeah, and then so we also did their pasta as well. And I know like people are dedicated. Like it's a little more costly because it's local. And like that's just the grocery store too. Yeah. But people are so dedicated to buying those products. Like they'll pick it over like a Primo pasta or whatever all the time.
Which grocery store was that again?
A Sobeys.
Sobeys. Oh, I didn't know they went through grocery stores as well.
A couple, yeah. I think like Safeways and Sobeys they're in. Depending on the store, that usually is a bit of a factor, but he comes in all the time and like promotes his stuff.
Well, from my interaction with his wife, Cheryl, she was a very nice person.
So you guys have heard that Winnipeg has a new food council?
Yeah.
City of Winnipeg? And I was like looking around online for stuff about it. I was just going to talk to you guys about it, but mm-hmm. there was actually a news story from a few weeks ago after their first meeting that they've been having an issue with community gardens, which is that veggie theft has become more common as the number of community gardens grows in the city. Yeah.
Vegetables are expensive. Not that I'm condoning or not that I'm promoting the veggie theft. But
vegetables are expensive to grow.
Expensive to grow, they're expensive to buy. Like, I can definitely see why there would need to be some strict monitoring.
Mm-hmm. Gotta get some electric fences on those gardens.
Yeah.
Oh, no. That's so scary.
This CBC article definitely, like, this reporter had some fun writing this article. I'll just read you the sentence and you can see what I mean. So this person that they've been talking to about the food council said that lettuce larceny, radish robbery, and other forms of produce misappropriation have become more common as the number of community gardens grows in the city.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a really great line.
Yeah, it was pretty good. But it's sad. Thefts were reported at about 20 community garden plots last year.
20?
20, oh, no. Yeah.
That is quite a bit.
Yeah.
Are there specific
vegetables they're stealing? Or is it just...
Is it always humans, or is it, like, the rabbits are stealing it?
I don't know if they've identified the thieves.
I guess you
can't
really convict rabbits.
I could definitely see that happening. People just kind of taking, double dipping, or, like, taking their stuff, and, oh, your tomatoes did better than mine.
Yeah, those ones look good.
Yeah.
You know what? Now that you mention it, my grandma used to be part of a community garden on the side of Chief Peguis Trail, and they had huge problems with theft.
Really?
Yeah. And I think they, from what my mom was telling me the other day, they still have those problems.
So and do they think it's other gardeners, or do they
I think it's just people maybe people it's like walking by.
Because
it's like accessible like from, you can just walk into there. It's just right by the trail.
Did they take any steps necessary to like combat that? Or is it just like...
Not that I know of.
They just trust people.
Yeah, I guess.
Like, please.
Very trusting, yeah.
Don't steal sign.
People are like that too. If you have like apple trees or something in your yard and it's like in your front yard. I know when I lived out in the country, like we lived still like in the town, and we had a big apple tree in our front yard, and like people would just come by and like grab an apple or two. And they're crab apples, so like they're not really, it's not benefiting them by taking crab apples. They're bitter. But yeah, people just like, people have like an impulse to pull fruit and vegetables off plants and eat them or take them.
Well, that's not nice. They work really hard.
But it seems like it's a problem, but it's not like a huge issue. They did say that
they brought the city hall.
We got to get our top workers
over
this.
The new committee has the power to forward reports through the channels at city hall all the way up to city council.
Wow.
So yeah, if they have issues, they have that power. But the committee also said that they saw the availability or the lack of availability of water as a more pressing concern for them. And the Food Council actually voted to ask the Water and Waste Committee to consider making water available for free to community gardens to sort of help with that.
Oh, yeah.
Huh. So I didn't even think of that. But yeah, I guess it would take a lot of water, especially depending on the size of the garden.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's interesting. Can see where that goes.
Yeah.
They just met on January 12th for the first time, so they probably won't meet again for several weeks. But we'll see.
We'll keep you posted.
Yeah.
See if there's any more vegetable theft.
So one thing I'm looking at right now, or I'm like considering getting, is they're like small indoor growing. Like they're kind of like, they look like almost tanks. They're usually for like growing small herbs and stuff.
Sorry, tanks?
Like some of them look like almost water tanks.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
How big are these tanks?
They look like they just like fit on your counter. So they contain, you like put the seeds into like a little cartridge. This one I'm looking at called Click and Grow Indoor Smart Herb Garden. And it comes different, like different vegetables, different spices, different herbs. And you basically like put the little pod in, put a little bit of water in, and it has like a light, and it kind of grows it for you. And it says that they sprout in 1 to 2 weeks, and they're like full size in 1 to 2 months.
Oh wow!
And then, which is like quite fast. And then you can enjoy them for 2 to 3 months before they die, and then you can order pods to like refill them at any time. And I just think for like living in this kind of climate, it's a great idea for if you want like fresh basil, you know, in the wintertime. So it's definitely something. And they're, like, pretty reasonably priced. They're anywhere between, like, $100 to $300.
Wow.
And they're small. Like, they're definitely small scale. But I think it's something I would like, because I like to garden in the summer. And I just find, I'm just, like, in the winter, I'm, like, waiting to, like, start my next garden. And
getting
I'm, like,
antsy.
What can I do? What can I do? And you can't do too much.
Huh. Is it, like, a backyard garden? Or do you do, like, on windowsills and stuff, or like
what I normally do?
Yeah.
Or I have a backyard garden. Okay. I actually just started a year ago, and it's like I started it last year for the first time, and it was so much fun, and it was so, I got so much out of it, and it was so rewarding. And I was like, first go, I was like, I'm gonna try pumpkins. I ended up having like 20 pumpkins.
Whoa.
And like it like overtook my garden. So I gotta be more strategic next year.
Yeah.
But or this summer. But it was definitely, like, I didn't expect to have so much fun with it.
Hmm.
But now I'm like, oh, I kind of want to do more. So this is, like, this is something I'm definitely thinking about doing, is, like, a little indoor growing.
Maybe we'll be talking to you in the future, and you'll be at the farmer's market. I think that's honestly how a lot of people
got there because
they started gardening, and they really were hobby gardeners for a number of years, and then they just realized that it got to a bigger and bigger scale, and they just became market gardeners.
They just grew too many pumpkins one year and
had to figure
took
over
it
their
out.
Garden like, oh, we got to sell these or something.
Apparently, pumpkins, you're supposed to like rotate them, so like you can't do them every year, or like you're not supposed to.
Yeah.
So like I'm going to take a break next year, I'll be back with more pumpkins than ever.
Wait, wow. Why do you have to rotate them?
It's just something to do with like the type of dirt soil, and it gets like irrigation kind of. It's not good to do.
I thought it was like a superstitious thing.
Oh, yeah. The pumpkin moon.
Yeah.
Not in season.
Wait, so what did you do with the 20 pumpkins you grew?
Okay, this is like kind of embarrassing that this is what I did. But some of them I used to cook, some I used to like decorate, and then I had a garage sale.
Oh,
and I was
so
like, what if I
garden.
I was my own community garden. And I was like, what if I sell some pumpkins? And I didn't really understand the value of pumpkins, so I would sell them for like a couple, like $1 to $4 depending on the size. And one lady came and bought like almost all of them, and I was like, I'm clearly undercharging for these pumpkins.
Now you know for next
next year when I grow you know
how much does a pumpkin only cost? I don't know, I haven't even bought them before.
I think like, well, when I think when I carve them on Halloween, they're like that you pay per pound, so definitely the bigger, the more expensive. But they're usually like definitely more than $1 to $4.
Yeah. So was that woman like really excited, or did she?
Oh yeah,
a poker
she was
face?
Like, "Do you have any more?"
And I
was
like, "What a steal!"
I was like, "None that I'm like selling." And she's like, "Oh well, if you want to sell more, I'll take them." And I was like, "What is she doing with all these pumpkins? Because I don't have like use for them." But I did end up making a pumpkin soup, which was like really good.
That sounds good.
Wow.
But yeah, and then. Oh, I made pumpkin cookies and pumpkin muffins as well.
I've made pumpkin cookies before. They're really good.
It's really? So yeah. Good, yeah.
Yeah, they're like shockingly good.
And you don't even realize like one medium-sized pumpkin gives you so much pumpkin puree that like you don't need to grow 20 pumpkins.
No.
Wow.
That's how you just sell them.
I know. Not at a garage sale though. At a farmer's market.
St. Norbert.
So were you tired of pumpkins by the end of that?
A little bit. Like, when they first started, I wasn't sure if I was going to get any, so like I would like research it. And so when you grow pumpkins, what you can do is there's male and there's female flowers on one vine. You're supposed to grow two plants, and then usually you'll take like the male flower from one plant and like mix it with the female flower on the other plant. And so I was literally like, it wasn't like normally bees do it, but I was so concerned that the bees weren't going to come. So I would like do it myself. So I would like take the male plant and, you know, make the magic. And I ended up getting so many pumpkins because that got me a bunch of pumpkins. And then the bees did come.
And they were like, what do we have to do?
Yeah, there's nothing left to do. It's all done here. These pumpkins are mating. And we haven't even been here. So I did that. And then, yeah, so I ended up getting a lot of pumpkins.
Yeah. Oh.
Now and they like take over. Like they took over the garden. They did not stop. It was like kind of like a horror movie. Like one day I'm like, did that vine just get like 10 feet closer to the fence? And it moved. And it like they grow up, they have these like little vines that come off and like grip things. So it would start like taking over, it would like grip onto another plant and like bring it down.
A little bit. It sounds scary.
Like, yeah, it would just take over the plants and like crush them.
Yikes.
Anyway, great pumpkins.
Huh.
Wow.
Didn't know pumpkins did that.
No. Do you have a big yard?
No, like I live in River Park South. The yards are tiny. So my garden went from like the side of the house, and then it just started like the pumpkin in particular started overflowing into the yard, and I just kind of like tried to keep it all in one spot, and I ended up like I grew so many things. I went to the gardening center right at the beginning of spring. And I was like, I'm gonna try corn. I'm gonna try quinoa. I'm gonna try jalapeno peppers. Like, and I was just like, and we'll see. And it, like, everything except for watermelons grew. So I was,
lucky. Cool,
did you grow them all the same year?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm an expert gardener.
Yeah. I know. Like, I don't know where this came from.
How did you not mention that earlier?
I know.
Yeah. And the quinoa. I'm like, I didn't know you could grow quinoa. And apparently, like, it's best to grow quinoa in, like, BC and stuff because they have, like, longer gardening seasons for that.
Mm-hmm.
But I grew it here, and I was like, I didn't know, so I, like, got two plants. And then it was like, yeah, five plants gets you, like, one little baggie of quinoa. And I was like, okay, so I have one plant, so I'll probably get a good 3 tablespoons.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't a lot. You don't get a lot. You have to grow a lot. With quinoa to get a lot, but okay. I still, just saying that, like, I grew my own quinoa was satisfying enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I definitely, like, I recommend gardening. It's therapeutic. I didn't expect it, and it's so rewarding when you, like, are
seem really proud of yourself.
You got, like, 20 pumpkins out of it.
I know, on my first try.
Not everyone can say that.
So I challenge you guys to start your own garden.
Right. I don't know. It sounds like a lot, Maddie.
I thought it was a lot. Okay, like, I'm not saying go out and grow some quinoa or maybe don't do pumpkins.
No, I mean, the pumpkin situation.
I don't know if I'm too overwhelmed with that.
Get a little bit of money out of it. I think I sold a couple for $2.
That's true, and you were way undercharging.
Yeah.
That woman probably resold them after.
She probably did. She probably is at a farmer's market.
Yeah.
She's like, yeah, I enslaved.
Yeah.
All summer for these.
She just came back for more.
Yeah.
What happened with your watermelons?
Okay, honestly, it was the pumpkins, but
like they crushed them.
Like they just the vines were so big with the leaves that it just like wouldn't give the watermelon any light, and I was really bummed because watermelon is another one where you do have to grow two plants.
Mm-hmm.
So I had two plants growing, and then halfway through the season, one of my plants, not even halfway, like at the beginning of the season, just when one was starting to get good, the other one died, and I was like, no. So I went to every garden center in the city, and I was like, do you have any watermelon plants? Like, do you have any watermelon plants left? And this one garden center had this, like, unmarked half dead looking like plant. It was like really small, not very well developed. And they're like, I think that's a watermelon. And I was like, it's not marked. They're like, no, like the label fell out. And I was like, okay, I'll take it. And I put it in the garden, and that was the one that like it did grow, but nothing grew on it because the other watermelon plant at this time was too destroyed by the shade from the pumpkin. So it did grow, but it didn't do anything, and it didn't get very big.
Aww.
But I think it was still a watermelon plant, so.
Can't be sure, though.
You never can.
Have you guys gardened much?
I literally have never gardened in my life.
Huh. No. I'm in the same boat as Caitlin. That sounds super interesting.
It is. Like, I feel like such a nerd.
So passionate.
I literally just randomly started it last, like, April, and...
You're the expert then.
Now here I am.
Have you gardened, Luke?
Only one thing. Well, I mean, I bought, this is not local, I bought ghost peppers seeds on Amazon. And yeah, I just grew a bunch of ghost peppers and ate them. And it was a terrible experience.
But tell us also more. Good. Did you cry?
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I don't know. Yeah, no. It's going to get gross if I tell all the details. But. Yeah, no, it was just one of those things, like, you do it for the experience, kind of like a dare.
Extreme food challenge.
We had always joked about it as a group of guys, and then eventually one day I just bought them, and I was like, yeah, we're doing this. And it took, like, a year, like 8 months for them to actually grow. All indoors, too. Oh. Actually, no, it wasn't completely indoors, but it started indoors. It ended off outdoors, I guess. But, yeah, and they were very, very hot. It's there's the.
Aren't they the spiciest ones?
They're the third spiciest in the world, which is crazy. So then I bought the spiciest after that.
What are the spiciest ones called?
California Reaper or Carolina Reaper, sorry.
Oh.
But now there's one hotter, I think. So.
Modified.
Yes, they're all modified.
Don't like spicy food. Doesn't sound like a good time.
Yeah.
I love spicy food. I'm all about trying the spicy wings, too. That's fun.
Yeah.
I'll give you a segment.
So today we just talked about an introduction kind of to the things that we will talk about in the future. This was a lot of the features that we're going to be doing in our magazine.
Yeah.
So thanks for listening, everybody. That was the Homegrown Podcast. Bye.
That was a perfect ending.